Hello, welcome once again to Leto as Law. I'm Steve Leto, again sitting next to my good friend Steve Stancroft of Romano and Stancroft. And I had you on not too long ago. We talked about the Lemon Law in Michigan. And the reason I have you back on, of course, is that you guys handle Lemon Law cases in Michigan and 22 different states.
Yeah.
And I have to stop because I know you guys are adding all the time. But I've told people who watch my videos that, you know, I've got viewers all around the nation, but also around the world. But in other states, I can't help you. And I get phone calls from people. There's a couple states where I suspect that there's either something wrong with the Lemon Law or not enough attorneys. I get tons of phone calls out of Texas, for instance. And I can't help people. And they say, but do you know anybody in Texas? And I'm like, no, I don't. And then when you guys told me that you guys handle all these other states, you know, you're getting to the point where, you know, 50-50, right? I mean, 22 plus Michigan. So
getting there.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, I've studied a lot of the Lemon Law in Michigan, but also in other states. Not for the sake of practicing law in the other states, but just for conversation starter. And I've discovered that the laws vary wildly from state to state. What kinds of variations do we see in other states?
Well, it really breaks down mainly along the time parameters that you have to meet the requirements of the Lemon Law. So remember, the Lemon Law is a very specific law in most states. In most states, that it's going to allow a consumer to go to the manufacturer and say, we meet the requirements of the Lemon Law. Our vehicle is presumed to be a lemon because it's been in the required number of times that you have in the law. It's been out of service the required number of days. And the defect is such that qualifies us because it's a substantial problem and so on. So the main problem is though a lot of states, this window is super short.
Okay.
Or, you know, it doesn't stay open for very long in terms of, like, I was just looking at, there are like 6 or 7 states where you have 1 year to have your vehicle in 4 times for the same defect or out of service for 30 days during that 1 year period. If you get beyond 1 year or 12,000 miles, then you don't qualify for the Lemon Law in that state.
Okay. And in states you don't qualify for the Lemon Law, you might still qualify under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act.
Absolutely.
Federal statute. Yep. But the shocking part to me is those time frames, because in Michigan, you've got 2 years to get the 4 repair attempts in, so long as the first repair is within the first year, or you get 30 days in the first year. But I've had people call me and say, Steve, well, the first repair attempt fell outside of 1 year. Or they go, yeah, first repair attempt was here, second was here, third was here, and the third was right outside. And so the idea that you're going to compress those time frames means that in some other states, it's probably very, very difficult to have a vehicle qualify under the state Lemon Law.
It really is. And what will happen is, I think people will call the manufacturer, and we talked about this before, where they'll call the manufacturer and say, my vehicle's been out of service for an excessive number of days, or it's been in a lot for the same issue. And they'll say, oh, but you don't qualify for a Lemon Law because it wasn't in all during the first year, or you didn't contact us within 18 months or 2 years. So it's not just that the vehicle wasn't in for the required number of times during that really short time period, but you also have to submit a claim. Usually within that same time period. Okay. So it could be 18 months, it could be 24 months, it could be 12 months. So it's some of these Lemon Laws are not that helpful.
Okay. And I know that, and this is one of the things that really blew my mind, because one of my viewers sent me a note and said, Steve, do you understand with how each state's Lemon Law varies from state to state, that there actually become these weird gaps between them? And I said, I'm not even sure what you're getting at. And he goes, well, and he showed me the case. I actually did a video on it about how there's a state that says to invoke our Lemon Law, you must live here. And next door is a state that says to invoke our Lemon Law, you must buy it here.
Correct.
So if you cross the state lines and buy it and bring it back to your state, you have no coverage in either state.
That's right. And we see that a lot in California, for example. People will go to Nevada and buy a car. People will go to Arizona and buy a car. People will go to Oregon and buy a car. But to really avail yourself of the California Lemon Law, the vehicle must be purchased in California.
And Michigan, for instance, will let you file a claim if you live here or if you bought it here. So we're one of the states where I just assumed every state would, because that makes sense to me.
Right.
But California, in their infinite wisdom, obviously said, well, we're going to protect people who buy the cars here. But I believe, isn't California one of the more liberal states in terms of how good it is for consumers, that it's fewer repair attempts and fewer days in service?
It is, but there are certain manufacturers that will still defend by saying, the vehicle wasn't purchased in California, therefore you can't avail yourself of the state's lemon law.
Right. But I'm just talking about somebody who has a vehicle. If you bought it in California and it's defective, you're going to have a probably an easier time than if you are in Michigan with the exact same vehicle.
No, the lemon law in California is, it's, you know, technically called the lemon law, but there are these various parts to it.
It's like a bird song act or something?
Yeah, well, there's the Song Beverly.
Song Beverly, there you go.
And then there's the Tanner Act, which is a kind of like a sub-act of the Song Beverly Act. There's the Consumer Legal Remedies Act. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can be helped in California.
Right.
If you've purchased a bad car in California, always call us.
Yeah, well, and it's like Michigan's lemon law is actually like the new motor vehicle warranty consumer protection. Yeah, it's this long, but nobody calls it that.
Right.
But all 50 states have got lemon laws, right?
As far as I know, you know, like you said, we're in 23 states. They all have something, I think, on the books.
Okay.
The issue is, if you've only got 1 year or 12,000 miles to get your vehicle in four times or have it out of service for 30 days, have that defect continue, notify the manufacturer that you're giving them a final repair opportunity, all these things, all these hoops they make you jump through, it's very, very difficult to be able to utilize the lemon law in a lot of these states.
And one of the questions I get a lot from people in other states, and people say, Steve, I know you're not practicing law in Oregon or New York or whatever, they'll say, but what constitutes something that is a defect that will allow me to become eligible under the lemon law? What's a substantial defect? And the interesting thing is that varies wildly again from state to state, because I know that Michigan says it's got to affect the use or value of the vehicle, but doesn't mention safety. So I'd like to tell the story of a client of mine who's driving down the Lodge Freeway in his Dodge, and the steering wheel fell off in his lap. And he picked it back up and jammed it back on and got to the side of the road and called the dealership. And they came out and they said, oh, this nut fell off. And they put it back on. I said, Derek, you're good to go. And my client's like, I don't want to drive that car anymore. That's something that apparently you remember, your steering wheel falling off on your lap at highway speeds. And now, the funny thing is, his car remained fixed. So he didn't have a claim under Michigan's lemon law, and it probably wasn't the Magnus Moss Warranty Act claim either. But there are states that say, well, you need so many repair attempts if it affects use or value, but if it affects safety, they actually lower the standard and say safety is a different issue, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It could be one or two times.
Yeah.
So, California is another example of that.
Okay.
Your brakes go out, and you're like, look, I never want to get in this car again.
Yeah.
You can present that one repair and say, I'm not driving this thing again.
Have you ever been driving a vehicle and had the brake pedal go to the floor?
I have.
and it was
in a Dodge.
Was it really?
Yes.
I have mentioned before, I worked at a gas station for many, many years and used to work on my own vehicles back when I was too young to afford mechanics, and I remember on a couple occasions screwing up something I was driving, some $200 beater, and I think somebody had forgotten to close a bleeder screw or something, and you're pulling it out of the bay and you hit the brakes and it just keeps rolling. Like, okay, I think we missed something, guys.
Yes. That was probably the most anxiety provoking experience I've ever had. I was going into Georgetown in Washington D.C. in this old 81 Dodge Omni that I had, and the brakes just went all the way down the floor, and I pumping the heck out of it.
Right.
Still going to go. So I just pulled up the emergency brake, and thankfully it got it stopped.
But by the way,
that's crazy.
That's something that the younger generation argues with me on, because I refer to this as an emergency brake.
Yeah.
And they go, no, it's a hand brake. and I said, but what about the one that's on the floor? I hit with my foot. And I've actually people say, but that's also a hand brake. I'm like, it can't be a hand brake, but I hit with my foot. That's an emergency brake.
That's funny.
And so it's a generational thing, but that's off topic. So the interesting thing about the lemon law, of course, is that before the lemon laws existed, and I'm a historian, so I'm into history type stuff, is there were always laws, theoretically, that if you bought a defective product, you could return it and get your money back. And then revocation of acceptance is one concept that's a UCC claim. But the interesting thing is that if you think about this and you do this like as a hypothetical mind exercise, if I sell you a defective product that costs $10 and you say, I want my money back, I say, no, I don't want to give you money back. It's mine, my money now. So you go to court and sue me to get your $10 back. It only makes economic sense for you to do that if your attorney fees are going to be less than the amount you're going to recover from me. So that if you were to try to get a manufacturer to buy back a $20,000 car back in the 60s, if there was no lemon law, they might look at that and go, let's fight every single person because we'll save money. It's cheaper to fight these than it is to defend them. So the lemon law, in anticipation of that, said, okay, if you are forced to sue a manufacturer to get them to buy back your defective vehicle that meets these criteria of our state, we're going to make the manufacturer pay the consumer's attorney fees on their behalf,
right.
Without which these laws would make no sense either. I mean, they would literally make...
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, as far as you know, do all 50 states allow for attorney fees?
As far as I know, yeah. I mean, there's that fee-shifting provision, which is critical to our ability to help people. Look, let's face it. I mean, the vast majority of our clients are super hardworking people who are doing everything they can to make their car payment, make their rent payment or house payment, take care of the kids, you know, deal with the groceries. And they don't have money left over for paying fees, especially on something like this where you don't know what the end result's going to be. That's really, that's upon us to take the claims that we know or have a very strong belief that we can provide you some assistance and then ensure that our fees are paid by the manufacturer as well. Because part and parcel of every settlement is going to be that the consumer is going to be compensated for everything they've gone through, and the manufacturer has to pay our fees.
Right. And what's scary is, and it's been a while since I've actually tried a case and had to go through the whole rigmarole battle on an attorney fee award against one of the car companies. But occasionally you hear these stories, especially the ones in other states where something went up on appeal. And then the manufacturer lost on appeal. And the manufacturer had to pay the attorney fees through a protracted trial and an appeal.
Right.
And I've actually seen some of these go to like the state Supreme Courts and so on.
Absolutely.
And you're talking six figures, hundreds of thousands of dollars in attorney fees.
Correct.
And if the manufacturer wasn't forced to pay that, there's not a consumer on earth who'd say, yeah, I'll pay $600,000 to get my car bought back.
That's right. That's right. You're absolutely right. And from our perspective, when we are taking on representation of a client, you have to be prepared to go all the way. And there are cases where we've gone and not been able to get a successful verdict for whatever reason. And so that was on us to pay for the expert, to pay for all the costs associated with litigation, which can be very expensive.
Right.
And it's just the way it goes.
I occasionally tell my clients, I say, by the way, you understand, I don't get paid until you get paid.
Exactly.
Because I've had clients who say, Steve, why is this process taking so long? And unfortunately, some people, and it's partly the media's fault, and it's partly, you know, just the way people are raised, that people tend to blame lawyers as being part of the system. They think that we're part of the system the way that the judges are and the other attorneys are. And the thing is, I would love to be able to file a case and fast track it and get it in front of a jury in a week. But that doesn't happen, especially in Michigan. If you have to file it in Wayne County or Oakland County, courts aren't slow or aren't fast. I tell people, I go, litigation is slow. It's glacially slow at best. So that's one of the good reasons that you want to look at early resolution if it exists.
Absolutely. And again, too, I mean, think about what people are going through with their cars. They depend on their cars. In most communities around the country, if you don't have an operating vehicle, you're in trouble. You can't get to work. You can't get the kids to school. You can't do the most basic things you need to do because there's no public transportation. So our goal is to get something worked out for people as quickly as possible. That's why we really like these pre-litigation programs that, like, for example, Ford, Chrysler, General Motors, Nissan, Volkswagen have all set up asking us to submit claims directly to them without going through the court system.
Right. And you actually mentioned something a second ago. I meant to ask you about this earlier. But one of the crazy things is this is one of the rare fields of law where you're fighting and litigating over something that is still being used. In other words, people don't have to park their car because there's a lawsuit over it involving lemon law.
Right.
But the weird thing is I've had manufacturers actually say, your client's still driving the car. It must not be that defective. And so it always kind of blows my mind at all the creative things that manufacturers will come up with as to why they think your client doesn't deserve to actually get what they bargained for. And that's one of them. They go, well, look how many miles they put on it. Like, do you want to drive a car that makes these noises or breaks down unexpectedly or leaks like this?
Well, the other thing is, I mean, what's the reality? How many people can afford to park their vehicle and go get another one and have two car payments?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean if you prevail on behalf of that client in a action against the manufacturer, then the manufacturer not only has to pay for the vehicle that was defective, but they've got to compensate your client for what they've been paying on this replacement vehicle while they've been driving it, waiting for some resolution on the underlying claim. So, yeah, they'll say whatever.
Yeah, one of the things I think we should probably address is I get asked about this a lot, and I'm sure you do too. I'm like a mind reader. I can tell what you've been asked by your clients because they ask me the same things. People will contact me and say, Steve, I'm in another state, or I'm in Michigan, and I have this defective car, and it's a lemon. And before I start pursuing this, what can I get back? And generally speaking, I'll let you speak this more broadly, but what you can get back are the things that you put into the car. But most states say specifically, here's what you can get back. And if it's not on that list, you don't get it back. So I've had people say, well, Steve, do I get my, you know, my insurance payments back? Or do I get money for the pain and suffering I went through sitting in the waiting room?
Right.
And if the state doesn't allow it, you don't get that back.
Well, that's where these lemon laws kind of cut both ways. So right. If you meet the requirements of the lemon law, then they can be super helpful because they'll say, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Consumer, you're entitled to get your loan paid. You know, they're going to take your car back from you. They're going to pay off your loan. They're going to give you your payments back.
Right.
They're going to subtract something for your use of the vehicle. But for most of our clients, it works out really well.
Yeah.
They might not get their insurance, you know, payments back, but they're going to get, you know, incidental stuff, like if they had it, rental charges or something like that.
Right. But the insurance they would have paid anyways, and
exactly.
They drove the vehicle.
Exactly. But the reality is a lot of people aren't going to meet the specific requirements of these state lemon laws. So in those, and even in some lemon laws, Steve, it's not that great because, yes, they'll take the vehicle back and, yeah, they'll pay the loan off, but they're not going to give you finance charges.
Okay.
All they have to do is reimburse the purchase price and the sales tax,
okay.
But nothing else. So they're deducting service contracts that were
right.
added onto the loan. They're deducting, they don't give you any credit for any finance charges. So in a lot of state lemon laws, even though they're taking the vehicle back and paying off the loan, they're asking our clients to come to the table with money
yeah.
to get out of the vehicle, which is, again, really very hard for most of our clients. But again, getting back to the difficulty of satisfying the requirements of the lemon law because of the short window of time that people
right.
have. So mainly, majority of our claims are filed under this federal lemon law,
right.
which says if you've had the vehicle in over and over and you're still having issues with the vehicle, the manufacturer has not lived up to the warranty, they haven't lived up to their promise to fix your car, you're entitled to damages. That's, you know, damages in that sense, it's kind of, you know, vague. There's no specific formula.
Right.
But we know, having done this for so many years, it's money. So
yeah.
you're entitled to money damages. Some manufacturers will give you money. They'll give you an extended warranty. They'll do other things to help you to compensate you for what you've gone through.
Right. And the damages issue is what confuses so many people because in most contract settings, what you can get for damages from a contract are very, very well spelled out. You're not going to get necessarily mental anguish, for instance.
Right.
And so, you know, I have people, trust me, I have had people with mental anguish and a lemon. You know,
oh,
like,
absolutely.
But
absolutely.
You're not necessarily going to be able
yeah.
to get that depending on what state you're in.
Right.
But the point is, like you said, it simplifies the process and clarifies what you can get back. And it makes more sense then because, at least in theory, knowing what everyone's going to be looking at to do the math on what you get for a lemon law claim, hopefully the parties can come together and settle it earlier.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And money a lot of times works better for people. So if you say to somebody, okay, you bought this $30,000 truck, GM is offering to repurchase the vehicle, but they want you to pay them $3,000 to get out of the loan because the loan value is higher than what they're willing to reimburse you, they'll say, you know, our clients will say, well, what kind of money are they willing to pay me to compensate me for the issues that I've been going through? It's like, well, we can probably get you $5,000 in cash. Hey, I'll take the $5,000. That will help me kind of get through the next year or do whatever I have to do to help me trade the vehicle in because I've got a pretty good trade-in value on the vehicle, whatever the case may be. And so it's nice to have those two options to
yeah.
settle.
And one of the more interesting things that people ask me about, and there's a misconception about this. My understanding is there's about 10 or 12 states nationally where if a vehicle gets bought back through a judicial process under the lemon law, they brand the title.
Correct.
The title says lemon law buyback or something that'll notify
That's
the
right.
next purchaser. But it's a minority of states do that, meaning that if the vehicle gets bought back in Michigan, the title doesn't get branded. Now, Carfax will often reflect this somehow,
mm-hmm.
and they'll sometimes catch it, but it's not comprehensive on their part. So I've had people who tell me, they say, well, Steve, I bought a used car, and I assumed it was not a lemon law buyback because the title wasn't branded. But I'm correct on that, though, right? It's a minority of states?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for sure in California, we know that the titles are branded, but there are plenty of other states
right.
Where I think these cars are, once they're repurchased, they cycle back through the manufacturing process because they're, you know, these reacquired
vehicle divisions
for all the manufacturers that they take these vehicles back under the lemon law. What they do with them after that,
Well, I can tell you that I know for a fact that many of the ones from Michigan, from several of the manufacturers, get taken to an auction in Chicago,
okay.
and they're sold at dealer auctions, and they're sold with a disclosure to the buyer who's a dealer.
Right.
The dealer is supposed to pass that along, and sometimes they do.
Yeah.
So that's one of the other problems. But you know, the interesting thing is that if you are in a state that has title branding, and you're negotiating a settlement, and the manufacturer says, we can buy the car back, but they know they've got to brand the title. Are they then inclined to pay you a little more cash if you'll keep the vehicle and let it become your problem?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I hadn't really thought of that. It could be that their position is, well, we're not going to get as much as at auction,
right?
Because we've got to, you know, brand this thing.
Yeah.
So let's just, you know, offer more money and see if they'll take it.
And I've told clients of mine, because I've had clients who say, Steve, I want to buy back. And to them, it's a principal matter. I bought this car. It's defective. They have to buy it back because the Lemon Law says they have to. And the manufacturer will call me up and say, Steve, we'll pay your client, and they name a very large dollar value. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of money. I call up my client. My client goes, I want a buyback. And I say, hang on a split second. Let me explain to you how to do a poor man's buyback.
Mm-hmm.
You take the cash from the manufacturer. You take the vehicle to a dealership and trade it in, not telling them you got the cash in your back pocket. If the cash in your back pocket makes up the difference between the value as it should have been versus the value as it is now with its history,
right.
then you've been made whole.
Absolutely.
They go, oh, you're right.
Right. And so you really, sometimes you literally have to sit down and say, you know, take out the pen and paper and write this down.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, walk you through exactly what's going on. Because what people don't understand, again, in these Lemon Laws, when the vehicles are repurchased, the manufacturers are entitled to an offset for your use of the vehicle.
Yeah.
And sometimes that offset can be really onerous.
Yeah.
I mean, they can charge you for all the miles on the vehicle. And it's usually like it's a fraction. So they'll take the mileage on the vehicle, divide it by 100,000. And multiply
right.
by the purchase price of the vehicle. Well, if you've got a $50,000 vehicle, it doesn't take long for that offset
right.
to be really significant
and
take away from what you paid into the vehicle.
It also encourages them to drag their feet sometimes, because if you're driving a vehicle during litigation, by the time you get to trial, you might have 75,000 miles in the vehicle.
Exactly.
And so I've had clients, I'm sure you have had too, where they bought the brand new vehicle that's a lemon by trading in something that had negative equity. So they wind up upside down immediately, and the manufacturer says, we'll buy the car back, but it turns out you have to pay us to get out of it.
Correct.
I've had at least two clients, and maybe three that I can think of, who couldn't get their vehicle bought back because they couldn't afford it.
Absolutely. It happens every month to us.
Yeah. And so what happens is you have to say to the person, well, then you,
right.
you know, because in essence what you did is you borrowed more money from the finance company when you bought this car. You borrowed more than the car was worth. And that's a problem. And so that's not the fault of the manufacturer.
It isn't. But it's you think about it from a consumer standpoint. They're like, look, yeah, we were willing to roll that negative onto this new vehicle with the idea that this is a vehicle we were going to be able to drive for 5 years and get that loan paid off. Now we can't.
Right.
We can't drive this vehicle. Now we're stuck with this negative balance. And it's really terrible. I mean, they're really in a hard place.
But the interesting thing is that most Lemon Laws say that the manufacturer can buy your vehicle back or trade you into a replacement vehicle.
Correct.
And so theoretically, if somebody had negative equity and couldn't buy their way out of it, they could at least trade into something as long as the manufacturer play along with that.
And I don't know about you, but the manufacturers seem to really be getting away from replacements.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wants to do it anymore.
Right.
They used to do it.
Oh, yeah.
We used to get replacements all the time.
Yeah.
Now it's like, we'll buy the vehicle back or we're going to give your client cash. And the replacement is super hard to work out.
And I'm not sure why that'd be, because it seems to me that that'd be great for goodwill.
I think what's happening is the manufacturers are losing control over the dealerships. So it used to be that they were, you know, the mothership, and they really directed the manufacturers what was, you know, what to do. Now the manufacturers are a lot more, I mean, the dealerships are a lot more independent.
Right.
And the dealerships can say to the manufacturer, I'm not going to cooperate with this replacement because you're asking me to take a vehicle out of my inventory, give it to this person, and not make any money when I can sell it to Joe, who just walked in off the street and wants to pay me for it.
Yeah, and I know from the old days, I remember manufacturers saying, you can take the vehicle back to any dealership, we don't care.
Exactly.
And other dealerships would play along, and now they don't do that anymore.
No, not at all.
So
I think it's the relationship has really changed.
That's crazy. Well, you know, once again, the time's flown by, as I promised you it would. This is Steve Stancroft, Romano and Stancroft, and I've mentioned before that their firm is the one. If you are in another state other than Michigan, or if you're in Michigan, you want to get a second opinion, call these guys. I've actually known you guys for as long as you've been doing this. So it's 20 plus years, and you know, it's a small community. There's about a dozen of us who do Lemon Law in Michigan, and we all know each other. We all get along because we all have a common enemy.
That's true.
Common enemies. Yeah. But, you know, I tell people, I've had people call me and they say, why should I call you? Why would I call any one of us? I don't care. I really don't. So, you know, but in particular, if you're in another state, people watch my videos have said, Steve, I'm in Texas, I'm in Colorado, whatever other state you're in, California.
Texas is, we help people in Texas all the time. California, of course.
Yeah. And I went to law school in California, but I'm not licensed to practice out there, so I can't help you guys. I'm sorry. But call these guys. I know them. I've known them for years. I trust them. By the way, I've had attorneys in other states call me and say, Steve, can you plug me? And I'm like, dude, I don't know you. It's not like I'm good housekeeping and my seal of approval is going to mean anything, but I'm not going to just come out and vouch for somebody that I don't know. Yeah. So I know you guys, I trust you guys. I have no problem at all coming out here and saying, call these guys. The information's in the description below. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
I'm sure I'll have you on, possibly Mark. We can talk him in over his stage fright.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And really, the bottom line for us is we are never going to encourage anybody to accept a settlement that we don't think is in their best interest. If we think they should pursue a claim more vigorously, like through the court process, and we can't do that, we're going to tell them to do that from the get-go.
Right.
We're here to help people in the way they should be helped.
Perfect.
All right.
I like the way you said that. And as always, I'll see you again very soon. Questions or comments, put them below. Let's talk to you later. Bye-bye.